pollutants choking up my soul. Head so dizzy, spun out of control. Take a deep breath to soften the toll, but they can't take away. Drage poslušalke, poslušalci, pozdravljeni v APR intervjuju. Uvodoma smo poslušali komad Hope z albuma Never Surrender skupine Siha Sin. To je skupina družine Benali, severnoameriških indijancev plemena Navajo. Igrajo punk rock z elementi tradicionalne severnoameriške glasbe in močnim socialno-političnim sporočilom o opresiji nad ameriškimi staroselci, ekocidu, genocidu, družinskemu nasilju in človekovih pravicah. V studiju pozdravljamo Clayson Benalija in njegovo sestro Jeanette Benali. And the father.
And this is our father, Jones Benali.
Jones, nice to meet you. So, as a prologue, I would like to ask you about your music style. It is categorized as punk rock with elements of traditional music. Why such a notion and why not the categorization as the other way around, namely like traditional music with elements of punk rock?
For us, the primary instruments that we play in this band are, you know, they're rock instruments, they're electric instruments. I play the bass, and my brother Clayson over here plays the drums, and he actually, in his drum kit, he has mixed elements with our traditional drum sets. So, it's definitely sounds more, it's more electric as the creative aspect is, but with our songwriting and all of that, that's, you know, definitely has the traditional structures and traditional melodies, but it's also in English. You know, some of the songs that we sing are in English. There's a couple that are in our traditional Navajo language, in our Diné language. So I think that definitely it doesn't sound as organic as traditional Navajo music.
For us, it's very hard to categorize it. In Native culture, you know, all music that's based around the drum beat is from the heart. And when you sing from the heart, you know, it doesn't matter what kind of music it is. You know, I think music transcends so many different boundaries, and it, you know, other people might listen to it and pick up some of the punk rock elements. For many years, we've had the mentoring and the guidance of people from the Ramones, and many years back with our previous band, Blackfire, Joey Ramone, the godfather of punk rock, who recorded on some of our albums, CJ Ramone produced one of our very first albums as Blackfire. When they labeled us, they kind of, Joey Ramone said, "You're fireball punk." So that was the label that he had given us. And now, as we've grown and matured, you know, it's accompanied so many different elements that it's really hard to put a label on it for us. You know, music, it's in passion, but the energy of punk rock is very truthful. It's very honest. It's something that's in your face. So, you know, we have a message. We have something that we want to share with people. So in that element, you know, that's, I think, where the punk rock, you know, the attitude that we will never surrender, you know.
So then the wave upon which you build your music is then the punk rock because of its strong social political activity, if I understand correctly.
Definitely. You know, when the first time I heard punk rock music, I was like, whoa, you know, I can identify with that. You know, I can identify that they're singing about issues that are really relevant to people, you know, to communities that are being impacted by environmental degradation, by injustices. So, you know, we could relate to that because of the area that we're from, where we've grown up our whole lives fighting against a coal mine and a government system that's already relocated 14,000 of our Navajo people, you know. So with that, you know, that kind of energy, that punk energy, is definitely something that we could relate to. And that's, you know, and then that kind of the storytelling aspect, the healing aspect from our traditional singing, that comes into play as well with how we write songs, what we want to say, And, you know, once you learn about an issue, once you learn about social injustice happening or the environmental injustice, then, you know, I hope that one can't help but feel like they need to do something to help.
Well, then let's move on to the central point of your activity. You convey a strong political message. In this sense, I would like to ask you, what exactly are Indian reservations? The name implies that it's something you put an extinct species into.
An Indian reservation is a government-made boundary of where they put Native Americans. It's an encampment, kind of. Some tribes, their reservations are clear across the United States. For other tribes, like for ourselves, we have our four sacred mountains that for our people.
Navajo, yeah.
The boundaries are these four sacred mountains, but when the government marched our people to a concentration camp, and when our people were released, they had drawn these reservation border lines that were not as large as our traditional sacred homelands, but they were much smaller. And so that's basically a reservation was made so that way it could control a native population.
So if I understand correctly, you were cut out from your sacred grounds and put there in some places. You have a strong cause fighting now, Save the Pigs. Could you talk more about that?
So, like you were saying, the reservation boundaries that were drawn oftentimes didn't represent the boundaries of, you know, where the reservation lines were drawn. So for our people, our traditional boundaries are four sacred mountains, and that's in the southwestern portion of the United States, in Colorado, New Mexico, Arizona, and also encompasses a little bit of Utah. And these four sacred mountains, for us, it's the like the pillars of a home, and it holds up our hogan. It's part of our very, you know, important culture. You know, the foundation of our culture is based off of these mountains. And today there's a ski resort that exists on this one of the mountains called the San Francisco Peaks. And this is a very holy mountain, very sacred to not only the Navajo, to the Hopi. There's many, many tribes, and it's extremely, extremely significant. It's like the Adam and Eve story.
So if I understand correctly, this mountain is in the desert, but they want to make a ski resort there.
Yeah, it's the high desert.
There is a ski resort there.
There is a ski resort.
But it's important to know that this mountain is not on any tribal lands, but it's managed by the Forest Service, which is under the United States federal government.
And what they want to do is make snow out of reclaimed sewage effluent. So whatever flushes down the toilet or gets flushed into the sewers and goes into a treatment plant, they want to use that on a very sacred mountain. So it would be like replacing holy water in a church and putting this toilet water in there for our people. And they want to make snow, clear-cut trees. They've already started some of the development where they started some of the clear cuts and putting in pipes. And this has been fought in the courts for a number of years. There was three major lawsuits that have kind of brought us to the present day where, you know, in the 70s, it basically reflected the Native American religious or freedom of religion act. Oh, why am I forgetting it? So the 1979,
are you talking about the American Indian Religious Freedom
Act? Yes, the American
act.
Indian Religious Freedom Act. That was
and RFRA,
established as a precedent by this particular mountain. There's a, this case went all the way to the Supreme Court, and they said you can go pray on the other side of the mountain, and basically established that Native people don't have religious freedom.
Right.
And
that was later, the Religious Freedom Restoration Act.
And then more recently was a case back in the 2000 2003 2004 and was tested the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, and that went all the way basically to the Supreme Court, where they reaffirmed a lower court ruling saying that it wouldn't place a burden on the religion of any of these tribes, and that we have no rights to pray on public land, and that so it's very complicated.
It basically it states that Native Americans don't have religious freedom, which is the First Amendment of the United States. We don't have religious freedom when it comes to sacred places on federal land.
But this particular mountain has been the precedent-setting case, you know, for many different tribes. It not only affects the people in our region, all nations throughout America, and even other countries that look to the United States and how they, manage federal lands.
What is the situation, the legal situation of Native American Native Americans? I know in Canada they are subject to the British Crown. However, you have citizenship in North America. Could you talk more about that?
As Native Americans in the United States of America, the federal recognized tribes, there are over 564 federally recognized tribal nations. There are many more other tribal nations, however, that do not have recognition as a tribe in the United States. And so the tribes that are federally recognized are given sovereignty. Now, what sovereignty is still really being determined in the United States. And one of, you know, the sacred sites cases, you know, this is a test of sovereignty as well. And so it's interesting to say that Native Americans have sovereignty. We're supposed to have sovereignty. We're supposed to operate as on a government-to-government basis. But it's difficult because our government systems were set up by the Bureau of Indian Affairs, which is a chapter of the federal government. And so the Bureau of Indian Affairs went into the tribal nations after the reservations were created and set up these governments. And oftentimes they put into office people that they could sway, people that they could kind of command what to do.
Control in their
own
way.
These are Indian people, Native American people. Yes, they are Native Americans.
Yes, they are Native Americans. Now, in our government system, we have a democracy. That's how our tribal president is elected, is through our votes.
I think the best way to compare it is if you look at the situation in Iraq when the Bush administration went in and declared war. They went in and the first thing they did was secure the oil reserves, and they put the land, everything in trust, and they formed the BIA, the Bureau of Iraqi Affairs. And it's this the exact same situation that happened to indigenous people, where they formed the BIA, Bureau of Indigenous Affairs, and they put all the land in trust. So today we are trustees. We don't own the land, even though it's, you know, against our beliefs anyways as indigenous people. We don't own the land. There's no title or deed to it. And the other things that the parallels are that the BIA was created by the Department of War, and it was as a way to access the resources, and they viewed our people as a resource as well. So it's a long history that we're still trying to change. And if you want to, you know, we can elect people and try to make a change in our own communities, in our own local governments on the reservation, but the BIA still has the overall authority and a lot of those same policies to destroy the Indian, kill the Indian, save the man, those are still in place. And it's very challenging for us to try to do anything from economic development, education, healthcare, you know, the different sacred sites issues, all of these things become a huge challenge.
I heard this principle you mentioned, kill the Indian, save the man, that in this sense, you the Native American citizenship would be revoked if you didn't give your children away to boarding schools. Is that the right information?
I know that not for our people. Our people did not gain citizenship until, or we weren't granted citizenship until World War II, when young Navajo men went to the army and they became code talkers. And so that's when we were granted citizenship. But the state of Arizona refused to recognize that until much later. So we don't have that parallel. I know that, I think that was with Canada. But for us, yes, though, our children were taken away and forced into boarding schools. And that's, you know, my father's generation and going back before then. And there's still a lot of healing that needs to happen, because our entire culture has been changed from this boarding school era.
What happened in boarding schools? Do you know maybe specifics?
Well, my father actually, he was lucky. He was 20 when he went to the school, to the boarding school. But usually they would take young children, remove them completely from their family, so that way they would sever all traditional teachings, language, and, you know, I know my father could tell you, because they told him, don't go back to your old blanket after he finished with school.
When you went to boarding school, what was that like?
Well, I'm old enough and I take care of myself. It doesn't matter to me. And they want to, they push the people to what they call a special priorities program. And to learn, I don't know, it's, I still want the school, but just like that time was different, you know, like half a day you go to school and then just like you, like army, you know, and they treat you, line up and march to the dining room or kitchen or restaurant, you know, where they, where we eat, you know, band for to dormitory, you know, or then we work, you know, the things like army, you know, in the morning minutes and.
So you also had to work. It was not only education, it was also work.
Well, to learn how to say yes and no.
So that's the education
the force,
aspect.
Of course, yeah. Mm. And so this is before the force you to go to school to, the, you know, the otherwise you, you know, because they want to brainwash the people, just like the first is Christian people come in our country and then they want to be able to go to heaven, you know. And next is the government and they try to, but at the same time the church, the Christian come in, the government came in and from this country, there's the reading the Bibles and law and make the take over. The saying is Nazi. Where we're talking about, there was the Indian lived there. A lot of our people been killed there because they had the gun. We don't have no gun. So wherever they want to settle down, that's what they did. And we say now, they said, this is our places, but they don't listen to us. And they take over and get smaller and smaller. We've been pushed around. Today, we're still the same way. But even the way they think, they say, read on the table, the government said, the government, the came in, they discovered. But we are there already. But because what we carry on is in here, we don't write on the paper. I work in a hospital to help the people. So this month that we're talking about, the lot of medicine on the mountain in the water. We don't want to spoil that the wastewater and, you know, but spoil everything. Even go in the water, where the spring is soaked in, and everything gonna be changed. So we don't want to do that. And so we talk for, because we belong to Earth. We even they relocate us, we still there. Just like put the trees sticking to other places. And we talk for them of what we believe, what we care on. Traditional way, these are sacred mountain. Just like you go to school, the burden to the ceremony go along with them. And then everything is different name. That's what we used before the hospital. Now they don't listen to us. So that's very important, because what we know, we're not educate ourselves, because we don't have authority. We are, but they don't understand our way. Just like a lot of people have a problem, you know, because they, what they learn in here, and that's all it is, you know. And then what they wrote on the paper said, this is the law, and then we can't break it. Even we're trying to fight, we hit the window, and the flies flying around, hit the window and fall down, later on get up again. That's what we do. We hired a lawyer. The lawyers sign up in the, under the table the government give it to. We never win. That's why we're here.
I'd like to mention really quick too that our Father Joan Spinelli is the first traditional medicine practitioner to work in a hospital. And this is nationwide in the United States, and it's really creating a revolution in really creating a respect for our medicines, not as some sort of folklore or anything, but as a science, because that's what it is. Our traditional medicines are sciences.
I'm very glad to hear that. Now, as a last question, I would like, it's a question I have to ask, maybe. There is a lot of hype about the supposed prophecy year of 2012. As a basis for such claims, conspiracy theorists like to reflect alongside the Maya prophecies to also the Hopi mythology. And the Hopi are people that also live in your reservoir. However, they are known as being very reluctant when it comes to discussing their mythology. Would you shed some light for our listeners?
Well, first of all, you know, for a lot of indigenous people, Europeans kind of are the ones who, you know, title our history as mythology. So for our people, you know, it's part of who we are. It's our identity, it's our traditional education, and it's an oral tradition. And there are so many different prophecies that really correlate with what's happening in this world today. For the Navajo people, for our people, we see the destruction and things that are happening to the environment as part of that what's leading to this change. All these different tribes and nations believe that there are several worlds that we come from. This is the third world or the fourth world, according to certain, you know, different tribes. And what we do to this world, it has happened before, where people have taken advantage or taken things for granted, and
so it's, that is a cyclical,
and it's led to a major change in our environment. And they say, in the beginning, all people, all animals spoke one language. And one of our prophecies as Navajo is that when it comes back to one language, then that's the sign that things will turn, and everything worked against us at one point. The earth was very unbalanced. Earthquakes, you know, what we call maybe climate change today, you know, it's similar. And our culture, our ceremonies are there to ensure that things are in balance, and that this universe, everything is held together by the different languages, the different prayers, the different cultures that were given by the Creator. and for the Hopi, they have their prophecies as well, that when there's a path that humanity chooses, one is simple. It's along the lines of farming and being in balance with the earth. The other one, you know, is, I guess maybe it's the technological sort of way, or the way that's not connected with the heart, that puts profit over life, or, you know, where there's sacrifices that people make. And from there, you can see it comes to an end. But the other choice, it's a continuing spiral. You know, it has continuation. You know, life will continue on. You know, if you look at indigenous people, have lived on this earth for hundreds of thousands of years. We saw the remains here of a flute from 55,000 years ago. You know, and we know that indigenous people have lived on this earth in a sustainable way and have not destroyed it yet. But in our lifetime, you know, this particular system is depleting every kind of resource, is doing its best to destroy every pure drop of water, contaminate all the air that we all breathe. And, you know, it's time for some sort of change or some sort of awakening, because people, they don't listen right now. So for our people, we recognize that there will potentially be a transition when it comes to all these things. And what you have to do is just understand the earth and be connected with it. You know, the animals, they'll tell you, you know, something's going to happen. You look at the tsunamis that occurred, and all the animals, they understood, they knew that there was going to be some sort of event. You know, something was coming their way, so they moved, they went to higher ground. And in our traditional history, they always tell us, you know, listen to the animals, you know, they've communicated in the past if there's going to be some big transition. In our traditional Navajo way, if a bear comes into your community, that means there's going to be drought, and they're telling you something, so you have to listen. So today we look at the world and we see all these species going extinct. They're telling us something now. In our mountain, the frogs, even the fish that are contaminated by the reclaimed wastewater, are all becoming asexual. And what is that doing to our bodies? How is that affecting us? So this is something that we have to wake up to, because a lot of scientists are saying, you know, the water, the contaminants, the chemicals could potentially make us sterile as humans. And what does that mean for our civilization? You know, these are very profound questions. And we see that the animals are communicating to us. They're telling us something now. And these prophecies are being fulfilled. So it's time for people to wake up and make that change.
Okay, we are running out of time. Torej, poslušalci, poslušali ste intervju za družino Benale. Z vami sem bil Luka Tetičkovič. Še vedno pa imate možnost poklicati in dobiti CD skupine Siha Sin. Pokličite na številko 01-242-88-00. To bi bilo to z moje strani. Želim vam lep večer. In da ne pozabim, you will also have a show in Murska Sobota.
Yes, we're really excited. We just played in Cirkno at a wonderful environmental event, and so we're really excited. This is our first time in Slovenia. So,
we love it here. It's beautiful.
Oh, my goodness. So...
Hello?
Dobar dan.
Dobar dan.
Za tebe kličem.
Živo today.
Živo, Miha tukaj.
Miha today, Miha. Živo, Miha. A bi zastavil kakšno vprašanje?
Lahko.
No, prosim.
Čak, ti mi postaviš vprašanje, ne?
Ne, ti, sprašujem, če bi želel zastaviti vprašanje našim gostom.
Aha, gostom,
tako
ja. Tako je. Zelo zanimivo. Prašal bi jih, naprimer, kako nam svetujejo običajni ljudem, ki ne živimo o tem v modernem svetu, kako se najboljše obrniti, kam jih, kaj početi, da se odpremo, povežemo z naravo.
Prav.
To je najboljši nared v tem sajtu, ker prihaja do sprememb.
No, zdaj, ker smo s vprašanjem zelo zadovoljni, si pravkar nagrajenec nagradne igre in dobil boš CD skupine Siha Sin. Podatke prosim pusti pri tehniku.
Hvala.
Our listener, he was asking, what would be your advice for a common man, like who is not connected with the nature, who is not expert on this subject, if I use these terms, what should he do?
In my opinion, reconnect with who you are, with all traditional values, all indigenous values from throughout the world have one common philosophy, and that's respect. To respect your community, respect the land, respect the air, the water, respect Mother Earth, and respect yourself. And that's so important. And I think that that's really the first place to start.
So that is not a specific technique, it's just an attitude change.
It's a change in, yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Change just, the way that you look at the world.
Just trying to be healthy. For our people, we call it to walk in beauty. So when you walk in beauty, you just have respect for yourself, for your family, your community, and pretty soon that kind of has a ripple effect. And, you know, if you care about yourself, then you'll care about other people. You'll care about, you know, if there's trash laying on the street, maybe you might pick it up. And pretty soon it has a big impact on just our own families and our own community.